This week, we're giving credit to the Big Uglies, offensive linemen. We're counting down the top 10 in football, and the top of the list, it's heavy on Dallas Cowboys. Plus, the disappearing difference between the blind side and right tackle, the weirdness of blocking for Aaron Rodgers, and some talk of fighting in a phone booth or fighting in an auditorium. All that on the MMQB 10 Things podcast.
The MMQB presents the MMQB 10 Things podcast, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your hosts, Andy Benoit and Gary Gramling.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling. I am here with Andy Benoit. We are always together. And we are going to continue our position rankings as we muddle through the offseason here. And this week, going to be a good show. Offensive linemen. This is the kind of stuff that you can't look at a box score and see who's a good offensive lineman. This is where it gets good. This is where Andy Benoit shines.
Yeah, this is if you're into football, but we won't make this ridiculous. I mean, if you like football but don't breathe it all day long, you'll still be. We'll keep this interesting for you too.
Well, it's like, look. I write some of the fantasy stuff at the MMQB, and people kind of ask me like, how do you know this? How do you know, whatever? How do you know Michael Thomas was going to be a breakout? And you kind of got to understand the X's and O's of this stuff. So this will. I'm saying if you listen to the show in full, you will win your fantasy league this year. That's my tagline. But there's
issue with fantasy, by the way. These guys don't show up in fantasy football.
They don't. There are some leagues that do. You can draft an offensive line, and then you get credit for their rushing stats and sacks allowed. But as we discuss a little bit off air, sacks allowed, not a be-all end-all stat.
No, why don't we just tackle that real quick right now, because Jackson Magnini was our researcher, and he does a great job. He's been working with me for a little while now, and he's learning the game, and we told him, our listeners know we don't buy into grading statistics. The statistics that are based on grading guys, the game does not fall into those black and white categories. And there's a Jackson's position, and I think he was smart about this, and I offered a disagreement. He said, well, okay, we have sacks allowed statistics, and that's not grading. And my argument back is there's still a grading element to sacks allowed, because as you and I talked, NFL coaches will tell you they don't know protection rules for the opponent. That's one that you have to be privy to the play call to know. You can't just watch the film. Guys have been in the league for their whole lives can't look at the film and easily figure out that's what they're doing with their protections. They can have an educated guess, but there's no way to know. Protections are incredibly nuanced and complex. So it's hard to know who's at fault in certain protections because of that. And there's other factors too. If a guy gives up a sack, but was he supposed to get a chip block help from the running back? If he was, he's going to block very differently than if he wasn't expecting that chip help. Or was the line supposed to slide his way and somebody didn't do that? Or did the quarterback make the wrong protection call and misidentify the Mike linebacker and the guy's looking in the wrong spot because of it and he's a beat late? Or does the quarterback move needlessly in the pocket or hold the ball too long? Or does somebody else on the other side of the pass rush get beat just enough that it makes the quarterback move into that sack that the left tackle gave up or whoever? I mean, and those are just common questions for any play. So, and then when you look at the numbers of who gave up the sacks, this guy had 5 allowed, this guy had 6 allowed. Well, the difference between 5 allowed and 6 allowed is one play. There's about 70 plays a game. So we're not going to get into who gave up what sack numbers, because I don't think it's a fair way to quantify anything.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That was Andy's take on sacks allowed. I like it.
I don't want it to look like Jackson was wrong on this either, because I think sacks allowed is a smart way to begin the discussion for linemen. I don't think it's the way you want to carry the discussion, but that's good football thinking to go along those lines rather than just team sacks allowed or rushing yards for the team. I mean, those numbers are very hard to quantify accurately as well.
Yeah, and I said this about the grading, and I think the same way about sacks allowed. I think from 10,000 feet, it's a snapshot. It's a piece of evidence. It's overrated for the most part, but you know, a guy who's credited with 25 sacks allowed is probably worse than a guy who is credited with one sack allowed. I mean, there's stuff like that, but it's when you get into the old, this guy gave up 8 and this guy gave up 6, so the guy who gave up 6 is obviously better. It's like, well, not so fast.
Yeah, right. And the quarterback has so much to do with all of this as well. You think those Indianapolis offensive lines during the Peyton Manning years, which those lines were full of mid-round and even undrafted guys, you really think those were the best line, that was the best O-line in football all that time? I mean, it's the quarterback is more responsible for sacks allowed than the offensive line is. In the NFL, that's how it goes.
There you go. Let's jump right into the countdown here. At this point, we are going to do the top 10, and if you are joining us for the first time, or if you have joined us in the past and just forgot how these things work, we do it AP poll style. This is Andy, myself, and our researcher this week, that is Jackson Magnini. We each submit our list of top 15, and then we do it AP poll style, where if you get a first-place vote, it's 15 points, second-place vote, 14 points, all the way down to 15th-place vote gets 1 point, and Andy's votes count double, because he knows football better than anyone I know. So we are going to unveil the top 10 here. At the end of the show, we will give the others receiving votes and maybe have a talk about a guy or two there. But let's jump in. Number 10.
Number 10.
This is Marshall Yanda, the... I think he's a future Hall of Famer. He has played all over the Ravens line. He played right guard and left guard last year. Played a little right tackle a couple years ago when Rick Wagner was hurt. I actually had him second on our list. On my list, I should say. So I was surprised that we had him this low.
A future Hall of Famer. Those are some big words to get this thing rolling.
He's been around for 10 years now. He's been playing at a high level for a decade.
Yeah, I don't know if Baltimore's been high. The problem with the offensive linemen in the Hall of Fame voting is it correlates a lot to just what your reputation, which means it often correlates to did your team win or lose. I mean, there aren't going to be a lot of Joe Thomas guys that play on losing teams and still make it to the Hall of Fame. Probably no questions asked in Thomas's case. I don't know if voters will see Yanda that. I'm not saying he's not. I think he's a quality guy. I had him on my list as well. I don't know if they'll... I don't know. Do you think they'll remember him and see him that way 5 years after his career? I mean, McDaniel, how long did it take him to get in the Hall of Fame? Is he even in the Hall of Fame?
I don't think Randall McDaniel is in the Hall of Fame, is he? I'm going to look it up right now.
Well, if Randall McDaniel's not in the Hall of Fame, Marshall Yanda's not going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, he is in the Hall of Fame. Randall McDaniel's in,
yeah,
so Marshall Yanda is in. We just made that determination. It's over. Conversation over. But he's won a Super Bowl. He's been to the, he's been a 6-time Pro Bowler or whatever. And I think there's, and again, look, we talked about the grading stuff at the top. And for all the sort of, for the issues we have with grading, I think grading has put more of a focus on offensive linemen. I mean, I think people are more aware of them, I think more aware of them. I think I wanted to end that sentence right there.
Well, sure, they're more aware of them. Offensive linemen often hate the grade. I mean, I hear all the time guys complain about their grading saying, there's no possible way for anybody other than my position coach and offensive coordinator, there's no possible way for them to know what my grade is. We kind of went into that already. McDaniel, by the way, retired in 2001. That was why it's hard to remember if he was in or not. It took him 8 years to get in. So with Yanda, I assume Yanda grades pretty well. I would imagine he does. Baltimore is a nice zone running game. I would think zone blockers would grade higher because to someone from the outside looking in, it always looks prettier zone blocking than man blocking. But I don't know what his grading numbers are.
He's usually just Googling Marshall Yanda PFF right here. He is quite high. They like him a lot.
I didn't think Yanda last season was quite as effective as he's been in other years. I think he's still a great player. I thought about, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, he was flawless or borderline flawless.
Yeah.
I didn't feel that way about him last season.
Yeah, I thought he came on once his shoulder sort of got healthier. He was coming off the shoulder surgery. And I thought by the end of the year he was pretty close to his old self, if not quite there. What I like about it, you know, he's played both sides of the line. He's played a little bit of right tackle and been good there. So that's why I ranked him so high. I think we've seen other guys. I think with Kyle Long kicked out to right tackle, I think it was not as successful a move. I think there's something to be said for that versatility when you can use it.
And one last note on Yanda Jackson mentioned everybody's arm length and our top 10 here in our notes. And Yanda's got the shortest arms. He's at, 31.5 inch. And yeah, that's kind of like a boxer's reach. That arm length is important for a blocker. It's not end-all, be-all, but it's impressive that a guy can play right tackle with shorter arms. Usually you play inside if you've got shorter arms.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, we might have discussed this, Andy. I'm sure we must have discussed it at some point. But do you know, as far as run-pass balance goes, do you know where the Ravens ranked last year? If number one was the Bills probably were number one or top three or so as far as run heavy. Do you know where the Ravens ranked?
It'd have to be very low. Is it dead last? In fact,
yeah, they were 32. That remains just absolutely stunning to me that they a team that really is not equipped to throw the ball that much. And I mean, look, they are a, you know, the John Harbaugh Ravens, they're a defense first or a grinded out offense type of approach. And for them to get that far away from that was stunning to me.
Yeah. And it makes it harder on your linemen when you play that way too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's go ahead to number nine.
Number nine.
This is a former Raven, Kelechi Osemele, Oakland Raiders, who is absolutely nasty. I mean, he is a bad man out there.
And just as a comparison to kind of make Yanda look more impressive, because Osemele is another guy who plays guard and tackle, and they've kept him at guard in Oakland, which I thought was really smart. It took a lot of discipline. Usually you'll see a team sign an expensive free agent and feel like they need to play him at left tackle, and the Raiders realize Osemele is expensive because he's excellent at guard, and that's where he's a real mauler. He's becoming more athletic as he plays. But his arm length, Osemele's, is almost 36 inches. I mean, that's almost 15-20% more than Yanda's. That's a huge, huge difference. And Osemele's oversized, Yanda's undersized, but there's just the contrast of those two guys, different body types.
Yeah, and I mean, look, Raiders offensive line, it was excellent last year. You know, they had some issues once they got to the postseason because of the Donald Penn injury. But you know, this is a real good unit, and they use a lot of that six man line as well.
They do, and they help their offensive. Like, to me, the conversation between Dallas and Oakland's O line and whose is better, it's not a conversation at all. Dallas asks more of its offensive line and gets more of its offensive line. The Raiders naturally help their line a lot. They do a lot of spread, quick strike passes, so your pass blocking is totally different. You can be more aggressive if you know the ball's coming out on quick timing. Also, obviously, you don't have to hold up and your pass block is long. When they run, it's a ton of double teams inside at the point of attack, so you're getting two-on-one, pretty straightforward stuff. And then, as you said, Gary, they play that six offensive linemen, and when they don't go quick timing in their passing game, when there's a deeper drop back, and maybe they'll be different under Todd Downing now at coordinator on offense, we'll see. But under Bill Musgrave, when they did go deeper drop back, they almost always kept bodies in to help pass protect. They were very much protection-minded in their deeper drop back stuff. So the linemen, they've got a – Dallas is less protection-minded. They asked their guys to win one-on-one a little more.
Yeah. And should mention real quick, this was a good note from Jackson Magnini, our researcher this week. Osemele, obviously a free agent addition last offseason. $13.5 million is his cap hit this year. That's the highest for any interior offensive lineman. But all these guys we're going to talk about, the top 10 guys, top 10 offensive linemen in football here, none of them are scheduled to hit free agency until after 2018. And, you know, we talked all during the free agency period about how, boy, these offensive linemen, these, you know, whatever, whether it's Mike Remmers or you know, whoever else was out there, look at these contracts. These guys are all getting so overpaid. You know, Russell Okung, some of the other guys that sort of bounced around this offseason. And that's kind of why this is another one of those positions that they they don't get to the open market.
Yeah, there's been very few offensive linemen, quality linemen in free agency the last few years, and you just said it's going to be the case for the next, at least the next year. And the draft hasn't been super deep there either. So linemen who are on the free agent market are getting paid big. And contrast that defensive line. It's been deep in the draft. It was very deep in free agency this year. And we saw a number of good linemen remain unsigned for a long time. Think Don Terry Poe, Jonathan Hankins. It's a market-driven league. We always need to remember that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Number 8.
This is Green Bay Packer, David Bakhtiari, the left tackle there. You know, it's got to be interesting playing offensive line in front of Aaron Rodgers. We talked about it a lot over the last couple years here. Rodgers is a guy who sort of, he almost takes himself out of rhythm a lot, and that's got to affect the guys blocking for him.
Oh, it drives those guys crazy sometimes. They'd never say that publicly, but it drives them nuts, I guarantee you. And I've heard that. So... And then Bakhtiari, I don't know if it drives him nuts or not, but when you're a blocker and your quarterback doesn't play on time, that's what drives you nuts, because you're blocking on the assumption that he is playing on time. You're blocking, if you know the ball's out in 3 steps or 5 steps or 7-step drop back, you're blocking differently for each of those things. So if it's supposed to be 5 steps and the ball's not out, it's going to look like you gave up pressure that you really didn't give up. And there's another reason it's hard to grade all this stuff. So
yeah,
but Gary, to these guys in Green Bay, to their credit, and Bakhtiari was the best of the bunch last year, the number of times that they maintained their pass blocks when Aaron Rodgers went deep into the down and got way off schedule was unbelievable. They were the most impressive pass blocking, survive the pass protection. They were the most impressive group in the NFL, I thought.
Yeah, and I mean, look, one of my favorite game stories from this past year was our Emily Kaplan wrote for SI.com. After the Packers Giants wild card game, she wrote sort of a mini oral history of that. I think anyone who saw that game remembers the play where they were down in the red zone. The Packers were down 6-0, and it was Rodgers basically just sitting back in the pocket. I mean, he was just in the pocket. It was like 8 seconds. It just kept on going on and on, and just watching it was. I guess nerve-wracking is how I would describe it, because it was kind of like, this can't be happening. Like, how is he still up there? How is there not some internal clock going off in Rodgers' head? But sure enough, he was untouched on the play, and then of course ends up throwing the touchdown pass, and Packers go on to cruise in that one.
And most likely the guy that Bakhtiari was blocking on that, and I'd have to go back and watch the play, I bet it was Olivier Vernon though, and that's a big time pass rusher, a big-time talent for the Giants. Bakhtiari's deal, he's not particularly strong. And keep in mind, if a lineman doesn't have the strength, then he doesn't have it. You can't ask a guy to be stronger than he is. So yeah, you have to work around that, and he has to work around that. And Bakhtiari's done a masterful job of working around it. Very good with his technique, has gotten a lot better with his balance. And when you're on balance, that's where you're at your strongest. So a lot of times these super strong guys, they don't play strong because they don't have good balance. Bakhtiari has gotten very fundamentally sound. It's fun to see guys who get better each year incrementally and become really star players. And that's exactly what David Bakhtiari's been.
Yeah, and I mean, look, it's I actually remember him coming out of Colorado. He was an early entry a couple years ago, and at Colorado he was listed at like 280. So he was coming in, and it was kind of like, wow, this guy's gonna play tackle or tight end here. But
I've got a story on that real quick about his name. This will sum him up, and then I know we probably need to pick up our pace on some of these linemen. But these are fun guys. Someone who knows and has been around Bakhtiari and Nate Solder. Nate Solder also came out of Colorado. Nate Solder's not on our list. This is not the reason why, but this is just some context. He said he likes Bakhtiari's mindset a little more, and I said, why? And he said, well, picture it like this. Let's say you're out somewhere on the town, or you're in a crowded restaurant, and some guy comes by and does something inappropriate to your lady friend that you're with. Solder might get in that guy's face. Bakhtiari would sucker punch that guy. And that's the difference between the two.
That's pretty.
Am I not supposed to share that kind of story? It felt politically incorrect as we went along, but that was. I'm just the messenger here. That was the mindset.
It's not a literal story. At least I hope not.
No, it didn't happen. It's just that's the guys. There's some nastiness to Bakhtiari. Even though Solder's probably the bigger guy of the two.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Number 7,
David DeCastro, Pittsburgh Steelers. DeCastro, I feel he's a guy who's really come along steadily. He was a first-round pick back in 2012, and I felt like he was a little bit underwhelming. He wasn't bad, but he wasn't a guy, his first, second year coming out of that Stanford system. Everyone, as we always talk about, he's pro-ready, pro-style system, all that stuff, and he was just kind of all right. But he has come on and become one of the best interior linemen in the league now.
Yeah, and why he's on my list, and he's always on my list like this, is counter. The counter run is a big run for the Steelers. It's basically power, so a pull blocker, but it's a misdirection power. And Le'Veon Bell's great at it. And if you think about Le'Veon Bell, counter runs are slower developing, and with a patient runner like Le'Veon Bell, that's going to suit him very well. DeCastro's the guy on the counter runs. He's almost always the pull blocker. He's the guy that Bell follows. He's the key to the play. And one run does not make a guy, but if you watch the Steelers, they'll go counter 4 out of 5 plays for certain stretches of the game. They'll line up and basically say, you know what's coming, and we don't think you can stop it. And that begins with David DeCastro.
Now, obviously, Bell is a runner, and we've talked about Le'Veon Bell on the running back show a couple shows ago. But he's a different kind of runner. He runs with, I feel like, a little bit of a different rhythm. Does that play into a guy, basically the strengths of a guy like DeCastro, where you kind of, you have to be patient to let the pulling guard get around. But I feel like Bell is extra patient.
He absolutely is extra patient. I would think that'd be more about him. That'd be interesting to ask David DeCastro, is with Le'Veon Bell's running style, which no one's ever blocked for a guy with that style before. It's incredibly unique. Does that change your approach to anything that you do? And I don't know the answer to that. My guess would be it doesn't, because how can you ask all 5 linemen to adjust for that? They've never had to. They're probably not athletically capable. What would the adjustments even be? But that he might have a different answer for you.
That's if I get a chance to get.
You know who we ought to ask? We're going to do Ross Tucker on next week's podcast. I just did his podcast, and let's make sure we ask Ross that question, because Ross Tucker would know. He played lineman in the NFL, and he played multiple positions, if I recall. He'll have an answer for that.
Yeah, we're actually going to do a special episode. Mid next week, Ross is going to come on, and I think you're doing a little bit of a exchange student right here, Andy. You're going to go on his show. He'll come on our show.
Yeah, we will. And I was on his show. It's out now by this point, and we talked Kaepernick on his show, which I think we'll do on our show next week. You and I, Gary, and then Ross, we're going to talk offensive linemen when we have him.
Good. That'll be a good show. Looking forward to it.
And it's going to be offensive line concepts, because he played in a lot of different systems. That's one of the advantages of being a journeyman lineman, is after your career, if you want to be in the media, you've got a lot of experiences to fall back on. So we get a lot of emails from you listeners saying, what's this, explain this, teach us this and that technique. Ross Tucker is going to be equipped to do that. So I guess it's going to be 2 weeks in a row of highly educational podcasting.
There you go.
But we'll still have the inflammatory Kaepernick debate at the front for all of the rest of you that just want to react to the world around you.
It's a veritable PBS, but then we can throw the takes at the top. We're gonna have a good Kaepernick conversation. We talked about this off air. I think there are some misconceptions being thrown around out there, and everyone gets very emotional about it. And I think it is time for a nice balanced conversation, because I don't see exactly eye to eye on you on the Kaepernick thing, and
you're a terrible person then.
I won't say some of the things that people said on Twitter the past week, but it is it's out of hand, but it's out of hand in like a head scratching way. It's like, what is going on here? Everyone needs to get off Twitter for like a month and just sort of reassess, and then everyone can come back.
Oh, I'm sure that'll solve it. Yeah, it's
yes.
Yeah.
Got to get out of the apartment every once in a while. Live your life. Stop arguing with everyone.
Number six.
Well, let's jump back in here. We have a number six on our countdown, top offensive lineman in football. This is Alex Mack. He was excellent in his first year with the Falcons. He was certainly worth what they paid him on the free agent market. And, I mean, my goodness, if he was healthier in the Super Bowl, we might have seen a different outcome.
Yeah, you're right. That was a big factor, especially down the stretch. It looked to me like, and I'm not saying this was the case, but it looked like someone who'd taken a pain injection, a pain-killing shot, and the shot was wearing off during the course of that long game, because he was battling, what was it, a leg or ankle injury, a lower leg kind
it was
of injury.
I think it was literally a broken leg. I think it was a broken,
oh, well, that'll
broken
do it.
Fibula.
That'll, yeah. Yeah. But I wouldn't be able to watch the Super Bowl with a broken fibula.
Try carrying 300 something pounds around on a broken fibula. But that's I'd love to ask him about that, because you know, one thing, talking to guys who played in the Super Bowl, they always say it's weird, it's a different rhythm. You have that super long halftime. Your body is not used to the basically the length. I mean, obviously it's still a 60-minute game, but you're going to be out there for 4.5 hours as opposed to three. And that is one thing that I've heard guys talk about that in the past, is if you have one of those injections, it does not last as long as it normally would.
The Falcons probably would not have been in that game without Alex Mack. They'll tell you he was the most important guy in a lot of ways. There's a lot of guys are important, but he changed a lot within their building just on a day-to-day basis. And then specifically on the field, they're an outside zone running team, which means you need to have a mobile center who can be the fulcrum of your offensive line. And Mack was absolutely that for them.
Yep.
Number five.
Well, let's jump ahead to number five here. This is an old teammate of Alex Mack. This is Joe Thomas. And, you know, the Browns they're building up this offensive line. Thomas is still hanging on. He's still one of the best in the league here. Andy, I think this is one of my favorite, terms that you shared was lawnmower, right? That's the term that you applied to Thomas?
It is. So what? I bet everybody probably agrees if you say who's been the best left tackle of this immediate era. Most people say it's Joe Thomas. And if you ask him why, like what does he do well, I bet you nobody would have an answer for that, because nobody talks about that. We don't think of it like that. And I was fortunate to have the chance to sit and watch film with Joe Thomas. And so I got this stuff from him. I don't know if he used this term or not, but when you're in pass protection, a big key, in fact, the most important thing probably, is your ability to move your feet without taking them very high off the ground. That's where the lawnmower comes in. You want to skim the grass. You want to be a lawnmower. You don't want to be a galloping horse out there, because if your feet are not on the ground, then you have zero power, and that's when you become vulnerable to bull rushes and getting off balance against redirect pass rushing moves. Your power comes from being on the ground. So can you move without removing yourself very much from the ground? And Joe Thomas has always been sensational at doing that.
Yeah, and, you know, look, we've talked about a little bit in the past about what sort of situation you want to drop your, you know, franchise quarterback. Whenever the Browns find that franchise quarterback, what type of situation you want to drop him into. And I think you saw with Jared Goff last year, a guy dropped behind a line that just wasn't ready to protect him. Whoever becomes the franchise quarterback in Cleveland, and I don't know, I mean, maybe it's Cody Kessler. It's not Cody Kessler, but maybe it's Cody Kessler. It is probably someone who is not there at the moment, and maybe it's DeShone Kizer. I guess you could say that too. But, you know, it looks like the front five is going to be ready for whoever ends up there.
Yeah, they've restocked it very well this year. I'll be curious to see how much longer Joe Thomas plays. He hasn't shown – he's not a flawless player, and maybe there was a time for a while where he was close to that. But he obviously, we have him number five on our list. We're all pretty high on him still. I would hope he'd stick around a while. He has a lot of interest outside of football, though. I bet you he doesn't watch the NFL. I bet he's not a football fan. But he does love talking the game. But guys like that, maybe he'll retire a tad early. Who knows?
That's the old I shouldn't give this away because we keep on talking about maybe we'll do a story on it one day. But Julio Jones, that's the guy who always comes up. Just not a big football fan. unbelievable player, but he's just not a he said guys would like would bust his chops all the time because he's like he just won't go home and like watch Monday Night Football. He's just not interested in it.
Mm-hmm. I remember when Ryan Tannehill came into the NFL, he didn't know which teams were in which divisions.
That's pretty.
Just doesn't follow the NFL, and that might sound ridiculous, but you don't need to watch football. You don't need to be an NFL fan to be a good NFL player, as long as you're willing to study the game.
And Ryan Tannehill is really good to have in your fantasy league. He'll have a terrible team, and since you listen to the show, you will beat him in your fantasy league, as promised at the top. Number
like you're
four.
Setting up a promo, or are you setting up a promo there or something? What are we talking about?
I'm gonna slowly steer this into like a fantasy football show. right under
and
your
you
very
pick,
nose, Andy Benoit.
And you picked the offensive line week to do it. I'm impressed.
Exactly.
Number four.
Well, we're ready for number four on this list, and this is the first Cowboy we have on our list, and it's actually the first of three. Coming up here, Travis Frederick, the center. He's the number one center on our list. I think he's, I would say he's the undisputed number one center in the league. And I almost feel like Frederick, his athleticism is almost underrated. He's not overly athletic. He's not Marquise Pouncey, but he moves better than he gets credit for. But he's so good at positioning and so good at angles that it almost overwhelms the rest of his skill set.
And it starts with the first step. So what's so challenging, we've talked about outside zone running. And you have to have your center be able to get around the defensive tackle who's immediately in front of him and then pin that tackle back inside. And you have to do all of this while you're on the move. You're not just going to stop and pin him back inside. You're all zone blocking, so the whole line's drifting in one direction. That's called a reach and seal block. You reach the guy, you get out to him, and then you seal him back inside. And Frederick's the best in the league at it, but it's very hard to do that as a center because you got to snap the ball first. So you're already a beat behind everybody because it takes time to snap the ball. And Frederick has, he's just sensational at it, and that's a big reason why Dallas has so much success in the running game.
Yep. And another big reason, and we'll jump right ahead to number three right here.
Number three.
Zach Martin, right guard. Last year there was all the discussion, Dak Prescott is the MVP, he's a quarterback on the best team, et cetera, et cetera. Ezekiel Elliott, can you give it to a running back? All that, and there was sort of this movement for give it to the entire offensive line, which again makes no sense. So you can't give MVP to five guys. They are five human beings with their own, their own souls, and you can't just group them all together into one thing. I would have been totally fine giving it to Travis Frederick or to this guy, Zach Martin. And there's another Cowboy on the list, but he missed some time last year, which is why I excluded him from MVP talk.
I think, so Tyron Smith, the other guy, still on the list. And is he number one or number two? You got to stay tuned, folks. But I think the Cowboys, if we were to place the value on their linemen, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and let's do 1, 2, 3, because these are going to be their three most valuable guys on offense, period. I think one is Frederick because of what we talked about a second ago with the fulcrum of the reach and seal blocking. I would probably say, probably Tyron Smith is two, but if somebody said Martin is number two, I'm not going to put up a fight over that. Zach Martin's gotten really good, and when he and Frederick obviously are very good in tandem, where Martin is good because Martin was a little fundamentally flawed his first few years. He was not as refined as you'd like, and that's to be expected. He's a young offensive lineman. He has become more refined, and where he's gotten really good is out in front. When he's in space, and he has an ability to get himself in space. He's not a guy that needs the play design to inherently create time for him to get in space. He doesn't have to be a screen pass or something like that for him to get out and run the alley. He's very good landing blocks in space and creating second-level windows for the running back.
Number two.
Well, another guy who's great in space here, as we move down to the final two in our countdown, it is not Tyron Smith. Number two is Trent Williams, left tackle in Washington. And look, he's a guy, he missed four games last year, and I don't know, the Redskins, they didn't seem to fall off too badly, Andy.
That's not a commentary on him so much, though. That's That's more about, and Ty Nsekhe, his backup, played extremely well. He overachieved, and all the credit to him. I have Trent Williams. I think he was he's number four on my list because I had three Cowboys in the top, which I didn't mean to do. That's just how it shook out. But I like Trent Williams a lot. The debate is whether he is the most athletic left tackle in football, which would mean most athletic lineman, or if you believe it's Tyron Smith. And that's to each his own. I would probably take Smith in that discussion. I think Smith has a little bit better body, especially with those long arms. And he's probably a better recovery blocker. So if he's a step behind someone, he can still get out in front of him. But look, I mean, Trent Williams, and when you get him out in space, he's the best out in space all around blocker in the NFL. And that's where the athleticism shows.
Yeah. And for the sake of our poll, Jackson Magnini gave Trent Williams his first round pick.
Number one.
And this was the first round vote for Andy and I. This is Tyron Smith, left tackle in Dallas. I mean, look, this is there's a cautionary tale to be written about the draft of 2011 when picks 8 through 12 went. It was Jake Locker to the Titans, then Tyron Smith to the Cowboys, then it was Blaine Gabbert to the Jaguars, then J.J. Watt to the Texans, and then Christian Ponder to the Vikings. So there's some sort of lesson about reaching for quarterbacks there, because two of the, you could say two of the top 10 players in football, and Watt and Smith were sitting right there on the board.
Absolutely, and that's what they have become. And for those of you who are wondering, hey, how can I have Tyron Smith as my number one, but I just said a second ago Frederick's their most valuable guy, it's because when you mix positions like this, we're doing guard, center, tackle. I don't know how to decide what we're doing. If it's value, I think Frederick's position and the nature of Dallas' scheme, I think Frederick's value is greater because of the position he plays. But if we're just talking who does their job, whose job's most important, or who does their job really well, Smith's a better natural left tackle than Frederick is a center. Let me put it that way. We're splitting hairs, but that's the explanation if you're wondering.
Yeah, there's a little bit of the old value over replacement player type of thing. Tyron Smith is so much better than the run of the mill left tackle. And look, you know, Andy wrote a great piece a couple of weeks ago. It's something we've talked about on the podcast about the left tackle versus right tackle thing. And just looking back over this list, we didn't have any right tackles on the list. As a matter of fact, on the top 10 here, a couple will appear in the others receiving votes. But, I don't know what's to be said about that. I guess, Andy, we still have all the great linemen in the league, and there's not a ton of great linemen, but they're playing left tackle. No one's really playing on the right side yet.
And I think that's needs to change, because the point of the article I wrote was that look at the best defensive ends in football, and this might be because teams put their best athlete at left tackle and just their other big good blocker at right tackle. So the right tackles are less gifted players. But the guys that face right tackles, your left defensive ends, that's where all the good ones are. J.J. Watt, Joey Bosa, Khalil Mack, Von Miller, Cliff Averill. It goes on and on and on. It's left defensive end is the most dangerous position on a lot of defenses. And the thinking is, well, we're going to have our right tackle block him, but because it's the right side of the formation and the quarterback's right-handed, the tight end's more likely to be lined up on that side because it's a right-handed offense. And so there's two on one, the tight end can help the tackle. It doesn't go that way, though. About 95% of snaps in the NFL, the ball's on either the left hash or the right hash. And whatever hash the ball's on, that usually dictates where the tight end goes. He'll go to the other side. So left hash, he'll go to the right. The ball's on the right hash, the tight end lines up left because there's more space over there away from the hash mark. So the whole idea that we need a left tackle and a right tackle, I think that gets way overblown. You're asking right tackles to block one-on-one a whole lot in the NFL still, and most of them can't do it. And they're facing better defensive linemen than the left tackles are. The other thing is, well, what about the blind side, the quarterback's blind side? And we've had this debate, Gary, how many times does a quarterback actually get drilled in the blind side and injured? I bet it happens once every 5 years. It happened to Joe Theismann, unfortunately. and or it happened to Montana in a big game, I think it was. It was Lawrence Taylor that was doing it. But those were different eras. Back then in the 80s, when the whole blindside thing, the late 80s, the quarterback was often under center, and he was dropping back 5 to 7 steps. Well, passing games now, the quarterback's in shotgun, so his vision cone is wider. There's less blindside, literally. And he's dropping back in 1 step or 3 step to get the ball out, because shotgun, you can be quicker like that. So left tackles, they're not asked to do what they used to be asked to do. And I think it's outdated thinking to believe that you have to put your best lineman at left tackle and your second best tackle has to be the right side. I think you want to consider doing it differently.
Yeah, and you know, for some guys, and I remember Gazzer Cherilis, when he came in the league with Detroit, he was kind of guy like this, is some guys are just more comfortable footwork-wise on one side of the formation than others. So if you kind of sit here, you know, based on this conversation and say, like, oh, you know what, they should Packers should well, they have Bulaga over there, but, you know, a team that doesn't have a great right tackle and have a good left tackle, they should just take that left tackle, stick him on the right side, something like that.
Yeah.
It's you know, it's not that easy. Some
guys do that.
Can't go side to side.
Oh, it's every coach I've ever talked to has said that is incredibly hard to do, to just switch sides. And there are some guys who flat can't do it, and it's hard to do in the middle of the game because the nature of blocking is so technique-driven, and you repetition it one way again and again and again. When you switch sides, you have to take all of those reps that you've done and do the exact opposite of them. And it's so much harder to go from left tackle to right tackle than it is to go from left tackle to left guard. It's that switching sides of the field that's a real problem. I'm surprised it took us this long, Gary, to get to that topic. But if you think about it, maybe it's not a surprise, because the only guys on our list that have really moved around in their career, it's the first two guys in Baltimore. Yonda, who's played a little bit of tackle, and he hasn't switched sides a whole lot. And then Asimile, who's played tackle and guard, and he also hasn't switched sides a lot. He's mainly been a left tackle or left guard. I believe he did play right tackle a little bit. But I don't think it's a coincidence that our top 10 offensive linemen, pretty much all of them, and for sure 8 of them, are guys that don't play multiple positions and don't move around. Because when you do that, it's hard to perfect your craft.
Yeah. Yeah, hey, it only came up because I'm constantly thinking about Gazzer Cherilis for some reason. I don't know why he always sticks out in my mind as the guy who can. You know what it was? Because the Lions took him the first round. He was a right tackle coming out of BC, and this was 2008, and it was kind of like, well, if you're taking a tackle that high, he's going to be your left tackle, obviously. And, you know, the book on him was that he just couldn't do the things on the left side that he had done on the right side. So he never made the switch.
He's not the only guy. When a coach is in the heat of the battle and he's calling plays, he doesn't care who his left tackle is or who his right tackle is, and neither does the other team's coach. They just care where the weak link is, because that's what you have to work around. And whether it's on the right side or left side, again, I don't think it matters a whole lot, because if you think about it, if your weak link's the right side, if it's Gazzer Cherilis struggling one day, then the guy who's beating Gazzer Cherilis is in the quarterback's line of vision. The quarterback's seeing his man get beat, and now the quarterback's playing the game very different mentally. Mm-hmm. So I would really espouse teams to not think about left and right tackle so much as valuing one over the other. Putting your guys where they're most comfortable is what's most important.
Absolutely. Well, let's call that a wrap for the top 10. We still have the others receiving votes. Let's do that right now. Let's see. We had 21 guys get votes this week, and obviously, ooh, since we just did top 10, this would start with number 11, and that is Kyle Long. After him, we have Andrew Whitworth, Marquise Pouncey, Lane Johnson, Ryan Khalil, Mike Pouncey, Jack Conklin, Josh Sitton, Richie Incognito, Jason Peters, and Taylor Luan. The only guy on this list who appeared in all three of our top 15 polls and didn't make the top 10 here was actually Andrew Whitworth. I'm a little surprised he didn't make it, just because he's been very good for a very long time. But you've talked about Whitworth and the fact that they basically teach a different technique in Cincinnati, and that was what made it sort of especially surprising that he would want to leave at this point in his career. You were out in L.A. recently. I don't know. Do you get a sense of you know, how it's coming along with him with the Rams?
I think they love him. And by the way, Andrew Whitworth's the biggest human being I've ever stood next to. A towering man. Unbelievably huge. Mike Iupati is the biggest I've ever seen in like the little ways. Like, look at the size of his wrist. Look how fat his fingers are, or thick his fingers are. There's more hand talk for you, Gary.
But
Whitworth, just in terms of his skeleton size, is unbelievably huge. They love him there. Greg Robinson obviously was not close to good enough for him, so I think everyone's excited to have some trust in that left tackle. I'm surprised. The guy that surprises me that somebody left him off their top 15 then is Kyle Long. I would think he would be on it, because what we just said about how hard it is to perfect your craft when you're changing positions, to give some perspective of what kind of talent Kyle Long is, he didn't start playing offensive line competitively until he got to Oregon, which I believe was in 2012, and he was a transfer student. And so then he starts playing. He enters the NFL early. He plays right away, and he has moved from what, left guard, right guard, and right tackle so far? He's played at least two, and I think three positions, moving around all the time. What an exceptional talent for him to be as effective as he's been, having not played offensive line very long and playing all over.
I left him off. How's that, Andy?
Well, how do you feel now?
I feel fine with it. He's moved around. You know what it was? It was kind of in my head when Yanda has moved around. I think Yanda has played right tackle at a I don't want to say exceptionally high level. I think that's overstating it. But at a high level, whereas Long was a little more not at that level.
Yeah,
he's versatile, but he's not quite as versatile.
And for those who are curious, Long would prefer to play guard. That's where he likes to play. And his explanation for that is, I'd rather fist fight a man in a hallway than I would in an auditorium. And just think about the guys around
that's
you and
awesome.
Guard. Yeah.
I think on that note, I think that's a good place to wrap. As we said, special episode coming up next week. We're going to have Ross Tucker. He and Andy are going to talk some offensive line. So if you want more offensive line talk, that is the place to go. Andy and I are also going to talk some Kaepernick, have a nice measured conversation about Colin Kaepernick, where we don't call each other names and whatnot, because Andy and I don't see exactly eye to eye, but two human beings can have a normal, rational conversation about this. I think we'll find out when we record it. But as for this show, thank you to our researcher this week. That was Jackson Magnini. His stuff was great. This was a tough one to research. I mean, you can't just pull the old box score numbers and sort of phone it in like that. Not that the other researchers do that, but O-line, that's not an easy one to research here. So thank you to Jackson, making us sound smarter. And Lou Pellegrino, our producer, always making us sound good. Chris Basil with the editing. I don't know. I'm always shocked at how good this show actually sounds. So thank you so much to all those guys at Digital Media. But most of all, thank you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I love our readers. Send the questions. We are going to do a mailbag show or two over the course of the offseason. Andy_Benoit, GGrambling_SI. We are both on Facebook, or write into talkback@themmqb.com. We love hearing from you, and we are just unbelievably appreciative that so many of you are joining us every week. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB podcast with Peter King, and of course this show, the MMQB 10 Things podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including themmqb.com, si.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.